Good morning, everyone. Thank you very much for coming out to Loyola Marymount University on this cool, rainy day. My name is Dolores Canizales, and I'm the Director of Community and Government Relations here at Loyola Marymount University. And we are very pleased to have Common Cause and the League of Women Voters here sponsoring this very important discussion about initiatives and how they're going to affect our state. And so on behalf of the university, again, I just want to thank you all for being here, and I look forward to a very interesting discussion. Thank you.
Welcome, everybody. I'm Liza White, president of the League of Women Voters of Los Angeles, and I'm here to welcome you to the listening and the understanding that you will take away from this wonderful forum that we have developed today for you. You are here anticipating hot topics, cold facts, a balanced forum on California's November 8th ballot measures. Today we will include both the overview of what each proposition proposes and then a presentation of the pros and cons of each, presented by different speakers and followed by audience questions. On behalf of the League of Women Voters of Los Angeles and California Common Cause, the two hosting organizations of this morning's forum, I would like to thank a number of people and organizations without whose support this event could not have happened. The funding has been provided by the William and Flora Hewlett Foundation through a grant from the League of Women Voters of California Education Fund. Thanks to Loyola Marymount University for providing this excellent site. Additionally, we've been supported by the preeminent website for voter information, www.smartvoter.org. by the Commonwealth Club, by the Mexican-American Legal Defense and Education Fund, MALDEF, by the Easy Voter Guide, a project of common knowledge, by the People for the American Way, by the 33rd District of the PTA, and a number of area leagues within the region, Los Angeles County, Beverly Hills, Downey, Pasadena, and the Santa Monica Leagues. Thanks to all those on the ground also who are members of the staff of the League of Women Voters of Los Angeles and California Common Cause, without whom we, of course, would not be able to convene today. We have two moderators of this forum who will be introducing our fine panel of speakers and running the show. Cindy O'Connor is the former president of the League of Women Voters of Los Angeles and has been interviewed numbers of times during election seasons because of her knowledge of the ballot measures. She embodies the League's focus, which is to educate, inform, and empower citizens to engage in their government. Kathy Fung is the executive director of California Common Cause. She organizes and speaks out regularly on behalf of Common Cause and the value central to its work as a citizens' watchdog organization, holding power accountable. The moderators will introduce our informed panel of speakers, and it is with pleasure that I offer the podium to them and start this wonderful forum. Thank you.
And thank you to Liza White, the president of the League of Women Voters of Los Angeles. My name is Kathy Fung, and I wanted to just say welcome on behalf of California Common Cause and League of Women Voters, and to all of the audience members who are out there in the television and radio listening. For each of the eight propositions, Cindy O'Connor and I will be giving a general description of what each proposition would do. We want to thank Smart Voter and Easy Voter Guide for their ballot descriptions. We will be using their language to introduce each of the propositions. Following that, we'll give the yes speaker 3 minutes to give their presentation and then give equal time to the no speaker. After each presentation, we will give the speakers 1 minute to respond, rebut, give any closing comments that they want to, and then we'll cover propositions 73 through 76 this way. Finally, we'll have audience Q&A for 20 minutes, and then we'll start all over again for propositions 77 through 80. Let's begin. Proposition 73's official title is Waiting Period and Parental Notification for Termination of a Minor's Pregnancy. It's a constitutional amendment. Right now, if an unmarried girl who is under 18 becomes pregnant, she can get an abortion in California without telling her parents about it. Prop 73 would change the state constitution to require a doctor to notify a parent or guardian at least 48 hours before performing an abortion on a pregnant minor. Exceptions would be made in the case of a medical emergency or if the minor gets approval from juvenile court. doctors would have to report to the state about all abortions performed on minors. The minor's identity would be kept confidential in these reports and any court proceedings. Prop 73 could increase in state costs of several million dollars per year for health and welfare programs and court expenses. Let's start with our first speaker, presenting for the Yes on Prop 73 campaign, Steve Frank. He is a publisher for the California Political News and Views and a political activist and commentator. Steve, you have 3 minutes.
Thank you very much. And I'd like to thank the organizers of this forum for creating an opportunity for the public to hear the different sides of the various measures on the ballot. At a time when only about 40% of the people will vote in this coming election, it's good to see folks who are interested in the fate of our state. Proposition 73 is truly about parental rights, nothing more and nothing less. It is about the right of the parents to know what's going on about those they're responsible for, financially and legally, their daughters. Under the current law, we have parental rights if your daughter wants to get a body piercing, a tattoo, or go to a tanning salon. Yes, those are interesting subjects, but what about it when your child is taken off of a school campus and taken to an abortion clinic to have an abortion, and then after the fact, with the parents not knowing about it, the daughter has medical problems, emotional problems, and the parents don't know why. But the parents are then responsible. A study of more than 46,000 pregnancies of school-aged girls in California uncovered that more than two-thirds, 71% actually, were impregnated by adult men whose mean age was 22.6 years old. Other studies suggest that most teenage pregnancies are the results of predatory practices by men who are substantially older. Prop 73 will enable parents to protect their young daughters from sexual exploitation by adult men, even if the exploiter is a stepfather, an uncle, or other relative. Instances of abuse and incest should not be protected by the shroud of secrecy. That does not sound like teen safety. That sounds like a crime. One could debate whether notification laws have any effect on reducing the number of abortions. But by knowing that mom and dad will be notified, the initiative's biggest impact is likely to be behavioral. Minors will be less likely to engage in casual sex, knowing that if they become pregnant, they'll be accountable through the process of parental notification. The most famous story about this, and I want you to think about your daughters, your granddaughters. Down in San Diego, there's a lady by the name of Diana Lopez. She found out that her daughter became pregnant, and somebody from the school where the 15-year-old daughter went to took her to an abortion clinic, and the mother of the rapist was in with the daughter, but Diana Lopez was not allowed to go in to see her daughter, and in fact was said to be, if you continue to ask this, you'll be under arrest. We need parental notification to protect the daughters that we all love.
Thank you, Steve. Urging a no vote on Prop 73 is Martha Swiller. She is the Senior Vice President of Planned Parenthood. Martha?
Thank you, and thank you again for the opportunity to be here to talk about this important topic. I'm here today wearing three hats. One is that I'm with Planned Parenthood, Los Angeles. The other, I'm a spokesperson for the Campaign for Teen Safety No on Proposition 73 campaign. But the most important hat I'm wearing here today is that of a parent. I have two young daughters, and most of all, I want them to be safe. That's my responsibility every day. It's my responsibility to talk to them early and often, to instill my values in them, to make sure that they know that they can come to me if and when they have a problem, whether it's an unintended pregnancy or something else. We all know that the best way to get our kids to talk to us is for us to talk to them. I'm joined in opposing Proposition 73 by the California Medical Association, the American Academy of Pediatrics, the California Juvenile Judges Association, the the California Nurses Association, because we all agree that Proposition 73 does nothing to make our teens more safe, but in fact puts them at greater risk. Proposition 73 does nothing to help parents talk to their kids about sex, does nothing to prevent unintended pregnancy in the first place, and does nothing to prevent those predators that he was referring to. It will give parents a false sense of security because no law can force a teen to talk to their parents. What this law would do would force a teen who's in a vulnerable situation, already scared, too frightened to talk to her parents, afraid they'll kick her out of their home, afraid that she'll be beaten up, afraid that she'll be made to feel ashamed for a mistake that she may have made. This proposition offers no real solutions to prevent these instances from happening, but will encourage teens to take matters into their own hands. Right now, a teen can get a safe abortion without her parents' knowledge, but after this law, she'll be able to get an unsafe, illegal abortion without her parents' knowledge. We're already mandated reporters. The doctors and nurses at these clinics are already reporting instances of abuse. In addition, there's an unnecessary piece of language in this law that changes the definition of a fetus to that of an unborn child. If we are really saying that this is only about parental rights, why is this language in there? We're on the right track in California. We are leading the nation in reducing teen pregnancy. We've reduced teen pregnancy by 40% over the last 10 years. We're doing the right things here. Proposition 73 won't change that progress, but will put those vulnerable teens who cannot talk to their parents, who cannot go before a judge, in the situation of taking matters into their own hands and going to unsafe, illegal providers. That's why the doctors, nurses, and Planned Parenthood oppose Proposition 73. Thank you.
Great. And now an opportunity to respond. Steve Frank, you have 1 minute.
I also am a parent of twin daughters, and I believe that they would talk to me if they had a situation. But I also believe that they may be too scared to, and that's what an adult does. And that's why this provides for doctors to notify the parents. I heard that doctors and Planned Parenthood abortion clinics all report the predators. Well, then, if that's true, why is the Planned Parenthood in the state of Kansas brought up on charges for refusing to report predators and rapists and incest victims? They're just not doing it. There's the other part of the problem is, well, this is not about abortion. This is strictly about notification. When the abortion goes bad, who pays? When the child starts acting out and has emotional problems because of that abortion and the parents don't know about it, who's responsible? Is Planned Parenthood going to pay for it? Or is the CMA going to pay for it? No, the parents. It's the parents' responsibility, and the parents need Prop 73.
Martha, your response?
As a parent, I hope that my daughter can talk to me, and I'll do everything in my power to make sure she knows she can. But if she can't, I want to make sure that she is safe. I want to keep her in the system of trained doctors, nurses, counselors, who are there for her, to offer her, to encourage her to involve her parents in the decision. And let's remember that most teens already involve their parents in this decision. But if they can't, I want them to be in a system that cares about them. I don't want them to go with illegal abortion providers. I don't want them to go across state lines. I want them to be here where they can be with doctors who are on call 24/7 to deal with it if there's any complications. I want them to be encouraged to talk to their parents or another responsible adult. Let's talk about the real solutions here. Proposition 73 does nothing to help teens talk to their parents, does nothing to prevent unintended pregnancy. We're already on the right track in California. Please vote no on Proposition 73.
Thank you, Martha Swiller and Steve Frank. Let me just remind our audience that we will be saving all questions until the end of the first four propositions. You are listening to Hot Topics and Cold Facts, sponsored by California Common Cause and League of Women Voters. And we are going to proceed on to Proposition 74. Cindy O'Connor.
Good morning. Proposition 74 is an initiative statute whose title is Public School Teachers Waiting Period for Permanent Status Dismissal. Right now, new teachers are evaluated every year during the first 2 years. During this trial period, the teacher has no guarantee of a job for the next year. A teacher who is hired for the third year becomes a permanent employee. School districts must follow a strict process to fire a permanent teacher. Proposition 74 would increase the trial period for new teachers from 2 to 5 years. It applies to teachers whose probationary period began during or after the 2003-2004 fiscal year. By extending the probationary period to 5 years, teachers would have up to 2 additional performance evaluations prior to achieving tenure. Excuse me. Prop 74 would make it easier to fire a permanent teacher who has received 2 unsatisfactory evaluations in a row. We have 2 very distinguished guests to present both the pro and con sides for Proposition 74. Speaking for Governor Schwarzenegger's California Recovery Team and the Yes on 74 campaign is Rosario Marin. She was the former treasurer of the United States. Speaking on the No on 74 position is Senator Liz Figueroa. Senator Figueroa represents the 10th District, which includes Alameda and Santa Clara counties. You both have 3 minutes. We'll start, yes, with Ms. Marin.
Okay. Thank you, and I certainly join my voice to the previous panelists who thanked very much the League of Women's Voters and Common Cause. This is truly, truly important. And one of the things that we all know that we're failing terribly is our children. The school system throughout California is one that is in deplorable conditions. Now, we all appreciate the enormous work that teachers do. I can tell you my children have benefited from having greatly qualified teachers. But we do have a problem. Not all teachers have the same standards of quality. Not all teachers do the fine job that our children deserve. And so one of the primary functions is to figure out how do we weed out the bad teachers. Our children deserve the very, very best teachers that we can provide. And most unfortunately, right now, the system that we have enables a teacher for 2 years to automatically have tenure. Now think about your own jobs. Did you, after 2 years of working, have the ability to have that job secure for the rest of your life? That's not the case. But for teachers, especially the mediocre ones, all they need is 2 years. And then to fire them is virtually impossible. Now, we are grateful for all the great teachers, and some of them are heroic in their efforts. But we need a system that protects our children from the poor performing teachers. Ensuring that they have consecutively 5 years of good efforts, I believe will go a long way in securing that the children end up with the teachers they deserve. And that way, we really hold them accountable, and we weed out the poor teachers, leaving the very best to take care of our most precious resources. Thank you.
Ms. Senator?
Thank you. I'm here to ask you to vote no on Prop 74. You know, we started with Martha mentioning that she was wearing 3 hats. Well, I, too, am wearing 3 hats. As a state legislator who has been working very hard to make sure we have increased funding in the classroom for books, smaller classes, small size reduction, which we've attempted to do and have done fairly well in that direction, to make sure that we have supplies for our teachers to teach, that we have current textbooks, all those initiatives that I have fought for in my whole 11 years. The second is a candidate for lieutenant governor. And in that capacity, I've been going up and down the state, going into the classrooms, listening to the students and listening to the teachers and asking them, what are the main obstacles to make sure that children have the best education in the state of California? And ladies and gentlemen, they never mention the fact about teacher tenure. They never mention the fact that it should be from 2 to 5 years. What they're saying is, make sure that the governor keeps his promise to bring the $2 billion that he said he was going to bring into the classroom. Make sure that you as a legislator keep your promises to the children of the state of California. And also, I represent Silicon Valley. Each employer in that district tells me we have to educate our children to make them competitive for the next workforce, to make them be able to compete, to enable them to be educated to have the jobs that they need in this world market. And third, my hat is a grandmother. Last month I went to school with my grandson who was entering kindergarten. What an exciting day to see those young teachers. A lot of teachers that have gone through a very, very strenuous environment to get to be teachers. Both of my children have married teachers that say, Mom, the times are very, very difficult. Help us be able to have additional funding in the classroom so that we could teach. This initiative, Prop 74, does absolutely nothing to educate our children.
Thank you. All right, now we'll have an opportunity for a response from our two speakers. Rosario Marin will give her response first.
Thank you. You know, when you're attempting to reform a broken system, you see how the resistance is. You see how powerful it is to resist a minor change. It may not be the entire solution to the big problem that we have in education, but we must start somewhere. And we must start by weeding out the poor teachers. How do we do that? How do we begin to deal with a very serious problem? If we continue to say that all teachers should have tenure just after 2 years, we must, if we are going to protect our children in their education environment, we must be willing to say, if you're a bad performing teacher after 2 years, guess what? You're out, period. We are not going to reward you with a lifetime tenure. That's what Proposition 74 does.
Governor Schwarzenegger's Blame Teachers Initiative does nothing to educate our children. Absolutely nothing. And why are we focusing on the teachers? The problem is additional monies for our children, to for their supplies, to make sure that the school building is a safe environment, to make sure that we focus on giving them the computers that they need to teach. You know, in my district, we make the computers, but our children don't have them in the classroom. How ridiculous is that? The fifth largest economy in the world, and we're still worried about school supplies in the classroom. This initiative does nothing to build on the strengths that our teachers already have. We have always, in every system, a few reforms that we need to make. But why are we spending, ladies and gentlemen, $50 to $80 million on a little reform when we should be spending the money on making sure that our children are educated? This does absolutely nothing to educate our children.
Thank you both for your attendance here today and your thoughtful comments. Now we'll move on to Proposition 75.
Thank you, Cindy. Just to remind our listeners, we are listening to Hot Topics and Cold Facts, where we will be covering all eight of the propositions that will be on the November 8 ballot. We're now moving on to Proposition 75. The official title is Public Employees Union Dues, Restrictions on Political Contributions, Employee Consent Requirement. It's a long title. Currently, government employee unions can charge their members dues, which can be used for political contributions. Government workers who are not union members also pay fees to the union because the union negotiates salaries and benefits for all workers. Fees collected from a non-member cannot be used for political purposes if the non-member objects. Prop 75 is a proposal to require all government employee unions to get written agreement from each worker before using that worker's dues or non-members' fees for political contributions. We bring back Rosario Marin to present the Yes on Prop 75 position. Ms. Marin chairs the California Recovery Team and was the former treasurer of the United States. Rosario.
Thank you. One of the things that is really important to understand about Proposition 75 is that this makes sure that every employee that has to be a union member, and I say that because in many of these positions, you must be a union member to have the job that you want. Once you are a union member, then you must pay these dues. Regardless of what your individual philosophies are, you have to pay these dues. Let me just give you a very simple example. The governor is being accused of raising all of these millions of dollars for propositions that some people suggest are not needed. With one single vote of the union leadership, every single teacher was increased $90 to fight these propositions. None of the teachers had a say-so as to whether they wanted to agree to a $90 increase. And with one single stroke, they were able to raise millions and millions of dollars. They accused the governor of raising millions of dollars. He had to campaign long and hard to get that. But the union bosses, immediately, with one decision, they were able to do that for the teachers. And some of these teachers, some of them may agree, some of them don't. But no one is given the choice to do that. Okay? It is very, very important that people are given that choice. And if they so choose, that's fine. But right now, they don't. You know, to be a teacher, you have to pay $900 dues. And if you want to continue to be a teacher, you better pay those $900, because otherwise you're not going to be a teacher. And at their will, the union bosses will be able to increase their fees, regardless of whether you agree with that philosophy or not. And that's true for other public employees. If the teachers decide that that's not what they want to do, they have no recourse. And they claim, the other side claims that, yes, they are given an option. They are not. We have heard testimony after testimony from teachers that say, teachers and other public employees, that say that they don't agree. But if they were to voice their disagreement, they will be shut out. That, ladies and gentlemen, is less than democratic. That is not giving people the right to vote, in fact, with their own money. And so people should have that ability. It's very simple. Let the employees vote as to how they want their money to be used. Thank you.
Thank you, Rosario. And here to present the no arguments on Prop 74 is Sally Miller. She is the Director of Government Relations for the Service Employees International Union, or SEIU, Local 660. Previously, she worked for U.S. Senator Paul Wellstone. Sally?
Thank you very much, and thank you to California Common Cause and the League of Women Voters for inviting me to be here today to speak on behalf of the No on Prop 75 campaign. Already this morning, I was at a rally with the California Teachers Association, And after this, that's why I'm wearing my jeans, I'm going to go out and join about 1,000 volunteers to knock on doors across Los Angeles County. Because this election is so important to working families of California. Proposition 75 is cleverly called paycheck protection. Well, this is the first deception. Proposition 75 is not about protecting workers. It's designed to silence them. That's why thousands of California's teachers, nurses, firefighters, and public employees oppose this deceptive measure, as they did when it was defeated in 1998, then called Proposition 226. Proposition 75 is unnecessary, and this goes directly to what the treasurer said, is that under current federal law and a ruling of the United States Supreme Court, no public employee can be forced to join a union and contribute to political campaigns. Proposition 75 is not about protecting workers. The millionaires, the billionaires, the CEOs behind Proposition 75 don't want to help workers. They want to silence us. Teachers, nurses, firefighters, police, and other public employees spoke out against the governor when he's tried to cut funding for schools, for health care, for public safety, and he didn't like it. Proposition 75 is bankrolled by Governor Schwarzenegger's corporate campaign contributors to make it easier for the governor to pass harmful agendas by silencing his opposition. And his opposition is teachers, it's firefighters, it's police, it's the clerk that I represent, the sanitation worker. Those are the kinds of people that are trying to be silenced. The second thing is that Prop 75 creates a second set of rules. It targets only public employees, yet leaves other organizations like corporate special interests untouched. Proposition 75 targets these people and new political restrictions that don't apply to anyone else, not the governor's corporate contributors, not wealthy individuals, not special interests like big pharmaceutical industries, the oil industry, or tobacco industries. Campaign watchdog groups like the League of Women Voters oppose this proposition because it does unfairly set a second set of rules in terms of these political contributions, which public unions right now are outspent 24-1 by big corporations. So again, this isn't about protecting workers. This is about trying to silence the voice of working families, and I hope that you will join me in opposing Proposition 75. Thank you.
We'll now give 1 minute to each speaker to respond, and we'll start with Rosario Marin.
There's a lot of money being spent on this campaign. This is probably the one that it scares the union bosses the most, and that's why they have spent an incredible amount of money. When they talked about the disparity, it's amazing that they have spent already over $90 million in discrediting the governor because they're truly afraid of what this proposition will do to them. And it has nothing with silencing the employees. It has a lot to do with giving them the choice that they don't have right now. The governor has not spent $90 million on this, so you do the math and you figure out who's really saying the truth. At the end of the day, it's a matter of fairness. Should employees be given the opportunity to opt out when they don't agree that their money should be spent in political campaigns? Very simple, very fair. That's all.
Thank you. And I also agree that employees should be given the option to opt out, and they are given that option, again, by a ruling by the United States Supreme Court. Any member who doesn't want to be a member of a union can opt out of that. Our union leadership, these union bosses that are being spoken about, my union boss, our president of my local, is a healthcare worker from King Drew Medical Center. And he was elected by 55,000 of other county employees, as is the other union bosses, as they're talking about, elected by the leadership of our unions. And they are given the responsibility to decide how to protect working families. So it is a very democratic process. People are given the option to opt out of this. And I think we should just look at what this is really about. And that's about corporate special interests trying to silence the voices of working families. So please vote no on Proposition 75. Thank you.
Thank you, Sally Miller and Rosario Marin, for covering Proposition 75. You are listening or watching Hot Topics, Cold Facts, sponsored by the League of Women Voters of Los Angeles, as well as California Common Cause. And I'll bring Cindy O'Connor back to talk about Prop 76.
Thank you, Kathy. Proposition 76 is an initiative constitutional amendment. This is a complicated proposition that would change how the state budget is managed. It would do this in three ways. First, Prop 76 would add a new spending limit. State spending would be limited to the last year's spending, plus an average of the past 3 years' income growth. Prop 76 would give the governor greater power to cut state spending. If state income falls below expected levels, the legislature would have 45 days to fix the problem. If the legislature and the governor could not agree on solutions, then Proposition 76 would give the governor the power to cut programs. And three, Prop 76 would change how the minimum funding level is calculated for schools and community colleges. Up to bat for the third time is Rosario Marin, representing the arguments on the yes on 76 side. Ms. Marin was formerly Treasurer of the United States and Mayor of Huntington Beach. She will have 3 minutes. Following her will be Jeff Berman, who will present the no on 76 arguments. He is the executive director of People for the American Way's new Western Regional Office. Previously, he was chief counsel to Senator Chuck Schumer and a law professor at Georgetown University. He will also have 3 minutes, and then we'll have the rebuttal period.
Thank you. I was the mayor of the city of Huntington Park and the former treasurer of the United States. I've been in state government as well for probably about 8 or 9 years total. I love government. Government has a very important role to play. But the spending, we have to manage it better. You see, from 1998 to 2004, state spending increased 44%. From $78 billion to $108 billion. We have to be able and be willing to restrain that spending. And let me explain to you why. In the cities have an obligation to live within their budget. The budget must be balanced. The state doesn't do that. And the way that I explain this to people, lay people, is it is okay to spend all the money when we have the boom years. But what happens when we don't have those boom years? And those years will come and do come. But the state spending continues unabated. Unless we have a way to constrain that spending, we act in the state government as if we are always getting that overtime check. You know what happens if some of you work overtime, you get an extra little piece of money, and you continue to spend that? But what happens with that overtime spending, the overtime money doesn't come anymore? Well, you adjust. Or in the worst case, when you are cut some hours, then you adjust. Your family does that. The state doesn't do that. What the governor is asking is, on those times when the money's not coming as we had envisioned, let's do it at mid-year. Let's review our budget, and let's take some action to curtail spending. Because otherwise, we'll have a full year of spending that was absolutely unnecessary and jeopardizes our bond rating. Did you know California is the 50th in bond rating? It's like having your credit, having a very, very, very poor credit rating. What happens when you have a very poor credit rating is that you pay more when you go to borrow money. That is happening to California. It is truly embarrassing that the sixth or fifth largest economy in the world has the worst credit rating, bond rating, for any state. It is embarrassing. We must curtail our spending. We must do it wisely, and we must pass Proposition 76.
You know, I have so much respect for Ms. Marin and for many reasons, but principally because if you look at your dollar bill in your pocket, there's a good chance her signature appears on it. And while Ms. Marin is literally right on the money when it comes to the dollar bill in your pocket, she is not, with all respect, on the money when it comes to Proposition 76. Here's why. We agree that we've got financial problems in this state, and we need a much more responsible budgeting process. We need good faith on both sides, people to come together and work together to fix the system. But if your priorities are children and education, health care, especially for children and seniors, community safety, and responsible government, you must vote no on Proposition 76. This proposition would cut $4 billion, with a B, billion a year from education. That's $600 a student in this state. And what that means is teacher layoffs, more overcrowded classrooms, cuts in classroom materials and programs. That's where the money's going to come from. That's not a responsible way to cut a budget. Beyond that, Governor borrowed $2 billion from education. He promised to pay it back. If Proposition 76 passes, he won't. Beyond that, this would lead to cuts in a number of programs around the state, including most particularly health care for children and seniors, money for police, for law enforcement on the block, for firefighters. And then beyond that, probably the part that's been most overlooked in this discussion is the complete eradication of checks and balances in our budgeting system. There is immense danger, and we know this because of what's happened at the federal level recently, where Congress and the courts have largely abdicated their responsibilities as a check on the executive branch, that we need checks and balances in government. This is part of the genius of our constitutional system in this country. This would give completely unchecked, unilateral, his way or the highway power to this governor or any governor who follows. Maybe you love this governor and trust him. Fine. But any governor who follows to do what he or she wants to our budget, to make cut after cut after cut. And, folks, this is happening in a world where we not only have our budget problems in this state, but the federal government right now is discussing a budget that would cost this state $3 billion over the next 5 years. On Monday of this past week, they just announced that they're going to be seeking billions more in Medicaid and Medicare reimbursements. So this money's got to come from somewhere, and we have to do it responsibly. It can't come from education. It can't come from health care. It can't come from firefighters and police, not in this way. Let's do it, but let's do it smart. Let's vote no on 76. Let's come back together and figure out a smart way to save California.
All right. Ms. Marin, what is your response to that?
Well, again, the smart way is to begin to do reform. The smart way is to say, wait a minute, we need to take a look at this. Clearly, the legislature has failed in their job to manage their spending. Now, if we see at mid-year that the state revenues are not what we had anticipated, the governor will then give it to the legislature and say, listen, this is reality. Our budget is not what it's supposed to be. We are receiving less monies than what we thought we were going to get. Take a look at it. You have 45 days to figure out a way to do it. And let the legislature do its job. Let them figure out how they're going to handle the budget or the decrease. You know, this is not a one way, my way or the highway, as they want you to believe. This gives the legislature the opportunity within 45 days to rein in on spending. Let them do their job.
So let's say the legislature does its job and inside 45 days comes up with a responsible way to handle the budget. So what happens then? Well, the governor could say, I don't like the way you did it. I don't like this. This doesn't go far enough or this goes too, whatever. The governor can say, it doesn't matter to me. I'm doing it my way and can reject what the legislature does no matter what and can go about making cuts to education, to health care, to community safety programs, to whatever he or she wants, no matter what. This is raw, abject, unchecked power. This is not what America is about. This is not what California is about. It is an irresponsible way to go about solving our problems. Look, we need reform, and we are happy to sit down at the table and talk in good faith to find smart and responsible answers. 76 is not a responsible answer. I implore you to go to the polls and vote no on 76.
Thank you both very much. This is a very complex and controversial issue, so I hope you will all pay attention and do some more reading on it before you vote. Presenting Prop 77, Kathy Fang, go ahead.
Hi. Well, we're going to take a quick break. We've gone through our first four propositions, and that's 73, 74, 75, and 76. And we wanted to give an opportunity to our audience members to be able to ask questions. So we're inviting our own Sally Jesse Raphael, Liza White, to the front to hold the microphone for the audience members and wave for us, Liza. If you've got a question, then if you could go to that corner and ask the question, and if you're on the right-hand side, then you can kind of make your way through the door, the outside doors, and come back in. We have about 20 minutes to have audience Q&A, and so if folks would just line up, then Liza will be holding the microphone for you and make sure that we get the questions answered. That microphone's a little bit low, so just go ahead and... Okay, that's perfect. Thank you. You are listening to Hot Topics, Cold Facts. It's a all eight proposition forum covering the pros and the cons of the eight propositions that will be on California's November 8th election. This forum has been sponsored by the League of Women Voters of Los Angeles and California Common Cause. And our first question comes from... Liza, why don't you go ahead and just read that question?
They can come over here and use one of these mics.
It is. This is working.
Great. So we're on air, and this is dead time, so I'm going to keep talking while Liza gets the microphone to one of the questioners, and she asks the question. You are listening to Hot Topics, Cold Facts. And this is a forum covering all eight of the propositions that are going to be on the November 8th ballot. And Liza is ready to ask her first question.
This is Joe Callanan. He has a question on Prop 73. At the present time, can a physician who will perform an abortion on an unemancipated minor access the medical history of that minor?
If the minor tells the doctor where that history is, yes. In most cases, the doctors don't ask for that complete history. They take the girl at her word that she is pregnant, they test, and they do the abortion.
Thank you, Steve Frank. And Martha Swiller, do you want to respond?
The question is whether or not a doctor will get the full medical history. I want to remind people that most teens do involve their parents or another responsible adult in this decision and in seeking this medical care. If the parent is not available and the medical records are not available, we have trained doctors, licensed doctors, nurses who follow the health code and good medical practices in asking all of the questions that they need to ask, getting as much information as they can, providing that teen with a 24/7 hotline they can call if there's any issues following or questions following the procedure. What happens if the teen cannot go to a licensed doctor? who will follow Proposition 73 if indeed it does pass. If she's too afraid to talk to her parents and too afraid to go to that doctor because she knows he'll talk to her parents, where will she go? Will that provider, an unlicensed doctor, someone who's not following the law, will they ask that teen for any questions? Will they be around if she has questions afterwards? Will they take responsible actions? No, they won't, because they will be hiding themselves. When we talk about these procedures, we want to make sure that young people who cannot talk to their parents are in a system of trained medical professionals. That's why we're joined by the medical associations in California in opposing Proposition 73.
Thank you, Sally Miller. And Liza, our next question? Well, I'll ask the respondents if you can keep it to about 30 seconds so we can get through as many as possible.
That would be wonderful. Yes, this is a question from Carrie Hitting. It addresses Proposition 74. Is it correct that Proposition 74 only addresses new teachers' probationary period, so current teachers are not addressed?
That is correct.
All right, that was a quick question and a quick answer.
That is correct.
Next question.
Well, I wanted to add, but many of the new teachers that we have are there to teach so many of the children of various cultures. As a Latina, we have a lot of new teachers that have struggled and worked hard to be able to teach all of the ethnicities here in L.A., in all of California. We talk about the beauty of the diversity of California. Now we bring in teachers to educate and deal with the diversity of the state, and now you tell those teachers that they're the first ones that have to go. So it'll be more difficult to recruit new teachers. In the next 10 years, we have to recruit over 100,000 new teachers. This Prop 74 just adds to the burden of recruiting.
Thank you. Liz Figueroa and Rosario Marin wants
thank you very much. Let me just say this. This is what really comes to the crux of it. The new teachers who have worked very hard, who have gotten great grades to come in and be the teachers, to do what they want to do, that is fabulous. We want all of those new teachers, and I can guarantee you that the great teachers will come in regardless of whether there is 2 years or 5 years. This is precisely the bad teachers. They don't want to come. They don't want to be there and be tested and have to be evaluated for 5 years. This in itself will help weed out the bad teachers, the mediocre ones, the bad ones. And let me tell you, I come from a city that has a very, very bad recidivism, where children do not finish high school. The Huntington Park High School,
I'd
has 67%.
Could we draw your answers so close so we can move on?
Well, sure. but that is the whole thing. Who comes to these schools? The bad teachers. Some of the worst teachers end up in the poorest schools, and we want to make sure that they have life tenure for forever. We don't want that. We don't need that.
Thank you, Rosario Marin. And our next question?
Yes, I'd like to introduce this member of the audience, and he can read his own question.
My name is Larry. This is a question about teacher tenure, since the purpose of this proposition is to correct the problem. I'd like to know what you can tell us about the number of teachers that are currently considered underperforming, about the teachers that are currently considered to be the problem that this proposition is intended to correct.
All right, Prop 74, and we'll start with State Senator Liz Figueroa.
I don't have the exact number of how many low-performing teachers we have, but there is a system in place right now to deal with those low-performing teachers, and in the school districts that I'm in close contact, it's the parents that are the first ones to notify the school district of those lower performing, and we could tell where those teachers are. But this proposition does nothing, absolutely nothing, to deal with those teachers, really.
Thank you, Senator Figueroa. And Rosario Marin.
You know, whether it's 1 or 10 or 100, what we want to make sure is that we protect the children from those poor performing teachers. And we don't give them a pass because after 2 years, they have life tenure. If your teacher has a poor performing, if your student, if your son or your child has a poor performing teacher, you really have no recourse. That's not really the case. And to get rid of a bad teacher, God helps you. God help us. It's virtually impossible.
Thank you. We have time for two more questions, so let's see if we can find any that are about Proposition 75 or 76.
We have several questions that seem to be more politically motivated than actually motivated towards the content of these propositions. One is to Proposition 76, and I will paraphrase it by saying that we do have a bad credit rating, perhaps that's to excessive borrowing. Is there not a possibility of raising taxes so that we could pay for these services rather than reducing the budget? And that would be to Proposition 76.
All right. We'll start with Rosario Marin.
Thank you. Yes, you know, your credit rating is affected, and certainly the state is affected by too much borrowing. We have, as you know, we have borrowed and borrowed and borrowed because we cannot control the spending. So, yes, you to balance the budget, you can do two things. You can either borrow money or you can increase revenues, increase taxes. Now, I will tell you, Californians as a whole pay more in taxes than the vast majority of the other states. Now, if in fact politicians want to raise your taxes again and again and again, that's something where you should have the ability to say, yes, I want my taxes to be increased.
And responding, Jeff Berman.
Sorry, Kathy, thank you. The Republicans in the California State Assembly have said that if Proposition 76 passes, it will actually encourage more tax increases. So I would say again, let's say no on Prop 76. Let's go back to the table in good faith and work together to find ways to solve California's financial problems. Going at it with this blunt and excessive tool of Prop 76 is not the right way to do it.
Great. And our final question, I'm going to ask Liza to take the microphone again. Yes.
Thank you. Yes. What is the reasoning behind choosing schools and public resources to cut from as opposed to other avenues of spending reform? And this would be addressed to Rosario Marin.
Right now, we have a formula that suggests that when monies come into the revenue of the state, that there is a specific amount that should go to schools. That's fine and good for this year. For next year, even if less money comes in, the automatic increase from last year goes into this year's now. And that perpetuates forever and ever. If the revenues are not what they're supposed to, we should be able to adjust and adapt. Unless we do that, we will continue to see that we have to raise more taxes if we don't want to cut spending.
Thank you, Rosario Marin. And I think Jeff Berman is going to pinch hit for the last question.
Well, just this last week, our governor vetoed legislation that would have allowed much more aggressive approaches to getting after major corporations that are cheating on their taxes. There are a lot of ways to go about solving financial crises and problems, but you can't just focus on one sector. And if you were to focus on one sector, I would respectfully suggest that children are not the first place to start. So I would say, again, no on 76.
Thank you so much. Well, let's give a hand to our entire panel. Steve Frank, Martha Swiller, Rosario Marin, State Senator Liz Figueroa, Sally Miller, and Jeff Berman. Thank you so much for helping us to understand Propositions 73, 74, 75, and 76. You are listening to Hot Topics, Cold Facts. We're going to take a momentary break while we switch panelists and we move on to talking about Propositions 77 through 80. Thank you. Can you speak into the microphone and make sure that we're catching you?
Testing.
Okay, very good. So, we are welcoming everybody back to the room. I couldn't tell you if how we could control the space. Oh, but Dolores is going to help us out. All right. So we're beginning taping now. Hi, my name is Kathy Fung, and I'm with California Common Cause. I'm welcoming you back to our forum on all eight propositions for November 8th's election. This is Hot Topics, Cold Facts, where we will be reviewing the next four of the propositions, Propositions 77, 78, 79, and 80. This forum is co-sponsored by the League of Women Voters of Los Angeles and California Common Cause. We'll go over the ground rules one more time so that all of our speakers know them. For each of the propositions, we will be providing, Cindy O'Connor and I, a general description of what the proposition would do. And we want to thank Smart Voter and Easy Voter Guide for their ballot descriptions because we'll be using their language to help our listeners and watchers understand. Then we'll turn it over to the yes speaker to present for 3 minutes and then equal time to the no side to present their position. After each presentation, we'll give the speakers 1 minute to respond, rebut, add to their original presentation, and generally conclude. We'll cover Propositions 77 through 80 this way, and then we'll open it up to audience Q&A. And what I'd like to ask this time to facilitate the audience Q&A is if you want to jot your questions down on a piece of paper, then Frances Talbot or Liza White, and stand up and wave again, from the League of Women Voters will collect your questions. So just pass it on down. They'll be watching for them. You can pass them down anytime during the debate, and they will collect them and read them. I would ask you just to write down your name, which proposition you're addressing the question to, and then write as clearly as possible so that our readers can make out what your question is. All right, let's get started. We're moving on to my favorite topic, redistricting. I know that everybody's just waiting on pins and needles to talk about this one. Proposition 77's official title is simply redistricting. The state of California is currently divided into political districts for our Congress, our state Senate, our state legislature, as well as our state Board of Equalization. Each federal and state lawmaker represents one district for Californians. And the lines for these political districts are redrawn after each federal census, which happens every 10 years, the next one being in 2010. Right now, our state legislature draws the district lines for our state legislators and U.S. House of Representatives. Proposition 77 would change the California Constitution to give power to drawing those lines to a panel of three retired judges. Prop 77 requires the first redistricting to take place as soon as possible, which probably means redrawing the new lines in 2005 to be ready for the statewide June and November 2006 elections. These new districts would have to be approved by the voters in November of 2006. If the voters reject the new lines, then another panel of three judges will be chosen to redraw the boundaries again for the elections in 2008. Meanwhile, those elected under the 2006 map would have to serve out the rest of their term, even if the voters reject that map. After the first round, the redistricting would take place only once a decade after each census. Presenting the Yes on 77 position is Michael Wissett. Professor Wissett is a vice president of Luntz Research and currently a professor of communications at Pepperdine University. You have 3 minutes, Michael.
Thank you. There's a reason why this is so commonly and often referred to as the Voter Empowerment Act. This is one of those rare opportunities in this state where you know, for us, it's such a wonderful thing where we spend the time, we take the time to really scrutinize the issues, to understand the pros and the cons. But I'm sure many of you realize that there are plenty of people out there in this state that talk about this being a state that promotes the special interests, a state that favors incumbents, a state that is about political protection and about preserving one's own self-interest in Sacramento. And there's a reason. And the reason why that message has resonated to a lot of those disenfranchised voters is because we don't have a perfect system right now. Unfortunately, there is a lot of truth that in Sacramento, it's more about incumbent protection than it is about giving voters the opportunity to exercise their voice. What we need to do is to give those voices back. We need to elevate the voices of every single Californian so that they feel like their interests are truly being served in Sacramento. One of the things that has been so important in the Voter Empowerment Act is to take the power out of the hands of the legislators and put it directly in the hands of the voters. The reason why it was determined that retired judges would best serve to help draw those lines and be approved, ratified by the voters, was because we went directly to the voters to ask how they felt the lines should best be drawn. If you go around the state and you look at the majority of congressional districts, assembly districts, it's quite remarkable when you look at the geographic boundaries that are drawn. And it's done for one reason, because every single incumbent, Republican or Democrat, knows where those boundaries lie in order to preserve their own political capital. And that's a shame. It's a shame because it's depriving Californians of a legitimate choice. Proposition 77, the Voter Empowerment Act, aims to give those people back their voice in Sacramento, to ensure that communities have some sense of sensibility when they're drawn so that we can actually maintain communities, so that we're not simply drawing lines in order to preserve the special interests, in order to preserve incumbents. What we need to do is take a stand and realize that the establishment is once again trying to deter Californians from having a true, legitimate voice in Sacramento. Representative democracy needs reform.
Thank you, Michael Wissett. And now arguing for the no on 77 position is Aaron Lowenstein, a student at UCLA Law School.
Thank you very much. Well, there are a lot of problems with Proposition 77, and they're basically trying to sell you a bill of goods, so you need to pay attention to the details on this one. Proposition 77 would give us a mid-decade, completely unnecessary redistricting plan, which we just did, at a cost of millions of dollars to taxpayers. Now, what are we going to get out of that? Well, proponents say we're going to get more competitive elections. They simply cannot keep that promise. Eight states that passed similar reform, so-called reform plans for redistricting, drew 75 congressional districts. Of those 75 congressional districts, not a single incumbent was knocked out of office because of redistricting. The fact is that the reason why there's so little competitiveness in California is the same reason why there's little competitiveness nationwide. The power of incumbency and the power of campaign dollars. Proposition 77 doesn't do a single thing to affect those two factors, and redistricting is just a red herring. But Proposition 77 does have two very negative side effects for California. One, giving the voters a voice? I don't think so. Unelected retired judges are not accountable to California voters and don't have anything to they are not looking for votes from California voters, so they don't have to listen. They also don't live in your neighborhood. They're not going to know anything about where you live, the issues that are important to your community. At least your legislator does live there. At least your legislator does know what's going on, and at least you can vote the other way if your legislator doesn't do what you want. Another side effect of Proposition 77. We're actually going to be compromising our power and California's power in Congress as a result of this. How would that happen? Well, the one kind of competitiveness you would see in Proposition 77 is when two incumbent House of Representatives, Congress members, are put into the same district, even though they're of the same party. And one of them is, of course, going to get knocked out of office. Now, so what is the result of that? We have experienced representatives who obtain more and more influence in Congress the longer they're there because it's a system of seniority there. Because they have more influence, they're able to garner more dollars for California, so we can have more federal dollars for highways, education, health. And Proposition 77 adopts a system where incumbents are going to be knocked out not because they did a bad job, not because their constituents are unhappy with them, merely because of an arbitrary decision that three unelected judges made somewhere very far from where you live. So in the long term, this is going to hurt our influence in Congress, and that's going to hurt our ability to get federal dollars from the government, which we deserve. So Proposition 77, in conclusion, makes a lot of promises it can't keep, but it gives away power we can't control, we can't afford to lose. Thank you very much. Please vote no.
Thank you. And now we have 1 minute for rebuttal. We're going to return the mic back to Mr. Wissett.
You know, it's a real shame when we talk about the repercussions of losing money because legislators are no longer going to be able to provide them from having more competition. I thought the whole point of democracy was to actually challenge, to create the opportunity so that we had a free level playing field, so that we could hold our legislators accountable. The problem is that they're not. And under Prop 77, we have the rare and distinct opportunity to reverse those trends. When political districts are safe, politicians don't have to worry about those who they should be accountable to. The reality is that the politicians do not make the effort to increase the money that should be going into our state for health care, for clean air, for more jobs, because they're not challenged. Without that challenge, there's no incentive for the politician to serve the people's interests. Instead, they're more preoccupied with serving the special interests. That is a shame.
Aaron Lowenstein, your rebuttal.
I am not saying that the current system is perfect. Of course, it's not. But if we're going to make a reform, if we're going to make things better in California, let's do it right. The people who put Proposition 77 on the ballot did it in a way where they circulated two different petitions and two different courts knocked it off the ballot. It was a rush job, and there's a lot of problems with it. For example, they say that voters have to approve the plan that the three judges pass. Well, what if, one, the judges can't reach a decision? There's no provision in Prop 77 what's going to happen then. And what if the voters reject the plan? Well, we have to do it all over again. We have to have another set of judges come, a new set of lines drawn, another couple million dollars spent. And by the way, do you think that when it comes before the voters to approve or disapprove this plan, do you think that special interests will come in and try to push voters one way or the other? Do you think that these judges are just immune from political influence? By the way, they're winnowed out. The category of the pool of judges is narrowed down by the top two Democrats and Republican bosses in the state. So this is not the right fix for California. Let's vote no.
Thank you so much, Michael Wissett and Aaron Lowenstein. We're going to go on to Proposition 78, and we're bringing Cindy O'Connor up to introduce the issue.
We have two measures on the ballot that are quite similar. We will be presenting them each in its turn, but you will notice similarities and differences in them. Prop 78, let's see, we did a little format change here, so okay. As our speakers will tell you, their names sound very similar, but these two propositions are very different. If voters decide to approve votes, both, then the one with the most votes will prevail. Currently, there are several state and federal programs that provide prescription drug coverage to people based on income, age, and/or disability. In California, Medi-Cal and Healthy Family programs provide prescription drug coverage for low and moderate income families. People with Medicare can buy drugs at a discount at some pharmacies. Federal law requires drug makers to give the Medi-Cal program lower prices. The state also negotiates additional discounts in exchange for giving drugs preferred status in the Medi-Cal program. Prop 78 would create a new drug discount program for people who do not already have coverage from a government program or private insurance. Californians and families with incomes up to three times the federal poverty level, or about $29,000 a year for a single person, or $58,000 for a family of four, would be able to get a drug discount card for $15 a year. The card would be used to buy drugs at set discounts at participating pharmacies. Under Prop 78, the state would negotiate with drug companies
for the rebates, and the participation of drug companies would be voluntary. Speaking for the presenting the yes side on Prop 78 is Matt Klink. He is the Southern California spokesperson for Californians for Affordable Propositions. Matt, you have 3 minutes to present the arguments for Prop 78. And speaking against Prop 78 will be Marvin Schachter, commissioner on the Executive Committee of the California Commission on Aging. He is also on the Legislative Committee for the Los Angeles County Area Agency on Aging. You will also have 3 minutes to make your presentations. Matt?
Thank you, and good morning, everyone. My name is Matt Klink with Californians for Affordable Prescriptions, the Yes on 78, No on 79 campaign. I wanted to give you all a little bit of a history about Proposition 78. Earlier this year, there was legislation in Sacramento, bipartisan legislation, I might add, called SB 19. That was put on the ballot by the chair of the Senate Health Committee, Deborah Ortiz, a Democrat from Sacramento, and Chuck Pachugian, a Republican from the Fresno area. This legislation was sailing through committee, and then the ugly specter of partisan politics reared its head, and for a variety of reasons, primarily because the Democrats and the labor union bosses thought they could beat the governor about the head with another issue, SB 19 failed to make it out of committee. Literally the next day, Proposition 78 was circulated. It's an exact replica of SB 19, and we know it because the same typographical errors that were in SB 19 are also in Proposition 78. Prop 78, as our host said, is on the ballot with another prescription drug measure, Proposition 79. Obviously, the one that gets the most votes wins, assuming that one or both get over 50%. The benefits of Proposition 78 are as follows. First, it can take effect immediately. It is a voluntary program, which means that it does not require any federal government approval. So as of January 1st of 2006, once Prop 78 passes, it will go into effect. And we know for a fact that prescription drug manufacturers and pharmacists have pledged that they will participate in the program. Two, Proposition 78 is targeted at the truly most needy Californians, 5 to 8 million of them who, frankly, don't have prescription drug insurance right now or prescription drug coverage right now. If you're super poor, you get free prescription drugs. If you have insurance, you get them. This is targeted at those people that don't. It guarantees the lowest commercial price available in California, and the state's Department of Health and Human Services has estimated that that discount would run at approximately 40%. Additionally, this is a program that's being successfully implemented elsewhere. The state of Ohio has a program that is modeled after Proposition 78. Prop 78 is modeled after Ohio's program, and discounts in Ohio right now are running at 31%. And equally important, the way that Prop 78 is written, it allows the state to apply for something called a state pharmaceutical assistance program, which means that California would be able to purchase medicines at a rate lower than what the Medi-Cal rate is right now. So discounts of 40% would likely be larger. I would urge you all to get the facts. Go to calrxnow.org and vote yes on Proposition 78. Thank you.
Thank you, Matt. And now we'll hear from Martin Schachter.
It's really a pleasure to be here when there's equal time on this issue. Everyone in this room has been barraged by the ads and television, by the mailings that you've received. I get my mailbox filled with propaganda from the paid propagandists for Proposition 78. The drug industry has contributed, according to the newspapers, well over $90 million to support their Proposition 78 and to oppose Proposition 79. Now, that's the visible money that they have to report. In addition to that, there's what politicians used to call walking around money, the contributions they make to organizations, tax-deductible contributions to the corporations, to buy their neutrality or sometimes to buy their support. In addition to the fact that they create these phony organizations, some of them are quite amazing, non-existent organizations with non-existent memberships that have names that claim to be seniors. For example, there's an organization listed here, the California Senior Advocates League, an organization supported probably by funds coming from the pharmaceutical industry. Well, why is the pharmaceutical industry spending this incredible amount of money, more than probably any other proposition on the ballot, to support 78 and 79? Well, because they have opposed and fought in the legislature and in Congress at every single stage of the game for effective efforts to control the cost of prescription drugs. For seniors, of course, this represents one of the reasons why some of us live longer. Prescription drugs are an essential part, and seniors are the ones who are affected by the incredible cost and the profit-making that the pharmaceutical industry has. You know, that's the most profitable industry in the United States. More, a greater return on invested capital in for the pharmaceutical industry than even the oil industry, et cetera. The huge salaries, average salary of a CEO of a prescription drug company is something like around $8,000 per working day, around $20 million a year. They are fighting tooth and nail to protect the profits of this essential industry as far as the health and welfare of the American people are concerned. I was amused to hear Mr. Klink, a paid propagandist, not a volunteer, talk about the Ohio experience. Does he know, has he read the Los Angeles Times just a couple of days ago on October 18th, which reported that one-half of 1%, that's not 1%, one-half of 1% of the people of the state of Ohio participate in this program after 8 months of heavy propagandizing for it. It represents 12% of the people who are eligible. That's the effectiveness of this program as far as benefiting the people who need prescription drug coverage. I guess I'm at the stop point. I wanted to also talk about the fact that there are alternatives to effective drug
proposals. You'll have a chance to talk about that.
Proposition 79. Yeah. I'll leave it to my colleagues to talk about that.
Well, thank you, Marvin, for spending absolutely 3 minutes to talk about nothing having to do with Proposition 78. We enjoyed your diatribe against the pharmaceutical industry. Let's talk about the facts for a second. First is that Proposition 78 is modeled after legislation, bipartisan legislation in Sacramento, SB 19, that ironically enough was supported by the American Associations of Retired Persons. I have the letters up here talking about it right now. Two, Proposition 78, when it passes on Election Day, will go into effect immediately, and it will serve 5 to 8 million Californians right now who lack prescription drug coverage. I would urge all of you to vote yes on Proposition 78, and again, go to the website calrxnow.org and get the facts about both measures for yourself. Thank you very much.
I don't know where Mr. Klink gets his information, but I have here an official statement by AARP, and it says, after considerable analysis and deliberation, AARP believes the most dangerous outcome in the election will be the passage of Proposition 78, which is sponsored by the prescription drug manufacturers. Proposition 78 would give control of which drugs will be discounted and by how much to pharmaceutical manufacturers. It is a voluntary program that can be ended at any time if drug manufacturers choose not to participate. Fact is that Proposition 78 was an effort on the a part of the pharmaceutical industry to forestall and defeat Proposition 79, which is a proposition with teeth in it. The reason why Proposition 78 is a fake, is a phony, is a fraud, but it's not funny, is because it is a measure that has no teeth in it, can be dropped by the pharmaceutical industry, does not effectively control the cost of drugs. They can raise the price of drugs at any time at all. And most important of all, they object to the fact that Proposition 79 provides an opportunity for people to challenge the costing of drugs by the pharmaceutical industry.
Thank you, Marvin.
Open up their books. So
we'll get some of that in our next round.
478 and
you mean the private right of action much. To allow trial lawyers to sue
Matt,
without clients?
We'll have time, more time, in,
yes,
after Prop 79.
Client, but so can the attorney
general. And we have a question and answer client. Period. We're going to now go to Prop 79. Prop 79 would create a new drug discount program for people who are not in Medi-Cal or healthy families. Californians in families with incomes up to four times the federal poverty level, about $38,000 a year for a single person and about $77,000 a year for a family of four, could get a drug discount card for $10 per year. The card would be used to buy drugs at a set discount at participating pharmacies. Under Prop 79, the state would negotiate drug company rebates. Drug companies that do not agree to low prices for this new program could have their drugs removed from the preferred status in Medi-Cal. Under Prop 79, drug companies could be sued for making excess profits on the sale of drugs. Presenting the yes on Prop 78 is, is 79, excuse me, Prop 79. Wait a minute. Yes, on 79. I got it. Is Jamal Watkins. He represents Health Access and is the Western Regional Director for the NAACP. And then, again, for against Prop 79, we will hear from Matt Klink, who, as I said before, is the Southern California spokesman for Californians for Affordable Prescriptions. You each have 3 minutes. We'll start with Jamal.
Good afternoon, everyone. I think that we are all in agreement here, and I'm speaking about all the sides, that there is approximately at least 8 million Californians who are being overcharged. The question is, who is overcharging them? And it's very clear that drug companies establish the lowest market prices that these individuals are suffering from currently. And I agree with Matt that we need to target the most needy. The reason why Proposition 79 was put on the ballot measures this year is because we don't have a negotiation mechanism for this community. When you go to buy a car, you have the opportunity to negotiate down the lowest sticker price. There's a bargaining sort of conversation. When you go to buy your prescription drugs, if you don't have coverage or if you're underinsured, there's no negotiation mechanism whatsoever. For those of us who have insurance providers and plans, we have someone that's actually there to intercede on our behalf. But what about the 8 to 10 million Californians who don't have that benefit or that measure? And so Proposition 79 allows for the state of California to act as a bargaining unit with the drug companies who, as Matt said, they voluntarily can today begin to lower drug prices, but they haven't. The fact remains that they don't need federal approval to lower prices. There's nothing that will say, oh, we're violating any policies in terms of communicating to lower these prices, but in fact, they haven't. And so the problem still lies that we need to address it directly by having the state negotiate on our behalf. In the state of California, we pay the most price for prescription drugs. 25% of prescriptions go unfilled every year, and medical professionals have come out and said that the problem is these costs are too high for communities that can't afford it. AARP, seniors groups, Consumer Reports Magazine, the League of Women Voters advocacy arm have all supported Prop 79 because it has teeth. It actually says that you have to negotiate with us and you have to set these prices. When the drug companies say they're going to set the lowest market price, they set the lowest market price today, and the prices are too high. That's why we're having this debate in the first place. That's why we have Prop 78 and 79, because communities are suffering who can't afford their prescription drugs. Seniors, communities of color, and women disproportionately are affected by being underinsured and uninsured. So at the end of the day, when you get past all of the rhetoric, you realize that the voluntary programs haven't worked. Otherwise, we wouldn't be having this debate. And so now we need a real solution, and that prescription for Californians is Prop 79. Again, it gives deeper discounts to more Californians, and it's a reliable mechanism that we can count on. And realizing that trial lawyers haven't contributed anything to Proposition 79. In fact, the pharmaceutical industry, it's impossible to sue them because they have so much mega bucks, and they actually cripple the individuals who are able to negotiate on our behalf. And so we're here taking a stand, and we want you to stand with us on November 8th and vote yes on Prop 79.
Thank you, Jamal. Now, Matt, your turn.
Nice job, Jamal. Good afternoon again, everyone. Again, I'm Matt Klink with Californians for Affordable Prescriptions. I'm here today to talk about why you should vote no on Proposition 79 and why it's the wrong prescription for California. First and foremost, a major problem with Proposition 79 is it attempts to leverage the health of society's most needy to provide discounted prescription drugs to people that already have health insurance. And here is the fundamental problem with Proposition 79. We know for a fact, and this is not pharma or the pharmaceutical industry saying this, this is the federal government. What Prop 79 does is it attempts to tinker with a federal program, Medicaid, or Medi-Cal, what we call it in California. When you attempt to tinker with a federal program, you must get approval from the federal government. Now, we know that the federal government, the Department of Health and Human Services, specifically the Center for Medicare and Medicaid Services, has said that they will not allow the health of society's most needy, the people on Medicaid, to be leveraged to provide prescription drug coverage for people that already have it. That's the primary reason why Proposition 79 will never go into effect. It will not provide a discounted prescription drug for anyone. Thus, Prop 79 is fundamentally flawed in its conception. The second thing is that I don't know if you all recall, but back in November of last year, in our last statewide election, we voted overwhelmingly for something called Proposition 64 that banned certain types of frivolous lawsuits. Guess what? In 79, there's a little bundle of joy that allows trial lawyers to basically go after anybody, any one of California's 210 million prescriptions written annually, and sue for such terms as, let me make sure I get them, unconscionable or profits that are unjust or unreasonable, terms that are not defined anywhere in the initiative. So if you want more frivolous lawsuits, 79 is your course of action. Third, you'll hear the supporters of 79 talk about this great program in Maine. They really stick it to the pharmaceutical industry with a hammer. Guess what? The Maine program is now voluntary, and they have said that that if they were to ever try to implement the hammer, they would need approval from the federal government, and that approval ain't coming. Last but not least, Prop 79 would cost Californians tremendous amounts of money. It would have to set up and administer discount programs for vast number of people covered, because what Jamal doesn't tell you is that it's not just the 8 to 10 million Californians. It also impacts all members of labor unions. So if you drive a crane down at the docks and you're making 100 grand a year, guess what? You get discounted prescription drugs under Proposition 79. 78 is a viable solution for 5 to 8 million Californians. 79 is a false promise that will never become law. Vote no on 79 and get the facts. Go to calrxnow.org.
Jamal, you have a minute to respond to that.
Well, specifically, there are four areas that Matt mentioned, and I want to touch upon them. First and foremost is the lawsuits. As you know, the state attorney general filed a lawsuit against the pharmaceutical industry for overcharging the state of California hundreds of millions of dollars in terms of prescription drugs. So we're not opening the door for Pandora's box. What we're saying is that as Californians, we recognize that we're being overcharged, and if our attorney general is willing to sue, then we realize that the mechanism and the problem actually lies in the hands of the pharmaceutical industry. In terms of it being federally enforceable, the Supreme Court actually, in terms of the Maine program, threw out Pharma's argument that this was an unenforceable mechanism, and in fact, the hammer does exist, and so we believe that although they spend millions of dollars to fight it in the courts, they're really the litigious organizations in this fight, that we will be able to implement Proposition 79. And then finally, the Legislative Analyst Office, the independent legislative analysts, have estimated that the programs, Prop 78 and 79, would actually cost about the same. And so I don't know where this huge bureaucracy that we're creating is actually coming from, this mythical number. But in fact, we see that if you go to vote yes on Prop 79, the facts are clear that 79 has real teeth and gives deeper discounts to more Californians. They haven't given us discounts voluntarily to this date, and they're not planning to do so in the future.
Thank you. Don't be fooled. 1 minute.
Jamal. The simple fact remains is that under Proposition 79, it's the Trial Lawyer Full Employment Act. They are allowed to sue for such terms as unconscionable, unjust, and unreasonable, making any one of California's 210 million prescriptions each and every year available for a potential lawsuit. Think about what it will do to California's biotech industry, which we don't have a lot of it in Los Angeles, but down in San Diego we have a lot of it, and we also have a fair amount of it up in the Bay Area. Let me give you a quick example. There's a company down in San Diego that makes a new diabetes drug that's coming onto the market relatively soon. They've been in business for 14 years. This drug has never come out yet, but it's going to come out soon, or it has come out soon. They've not spent anything, they've not gone out to the public, but they've incurred a heck of a lot of costs. That drug is probably going to be fairly expensive when it comes out. So some trial lawyer can pick up on that and say, this costs too much money. They could put that company out of business, and they've not made one dime on anything. Vote no on 79, vote yes on 78, get the facts, go to calrxnow.org. Thank you.
Thank you both for illuminating the issue so well. We appreciate it. And now we're to our last measure, and that is Proposition 80.
Folks, we're on our last lap. Proposition 80's official title is Electric Service Providers Regulation. Right now, California has three major private utility companies. They are Pacific Gas and Electric, Southern California Edison, and San Diego Gas and Electric. Some areas like Los Angeles are served by a public power company owned by a local government. There are also some electric service providers used mostly by larger businesses. California's Public Utilities Commission, or PUC, has a lot of control over the three major utility companies and very little control over the other companies. In the 1990s, California began reducing state control of electricity with the goal of lowering prices for more competition. In 2001, this deregulation was put on hold because of electricity shortages. Prop 80 would increase state regulation of California's electricity market and make it harder to reduce state control. Prop 80 would also make permanent the current ban on customers switching from the major utility companies to other providers. The state PUC could regulate the rates of all electric service providers except utilities owned by local governments. All PUC-controlled electric sellers would also be required to use more renewable energy sources, with the goal of 20% moved up to 2010 instead of the current goal of 2017. Representing the yes on Prop 80 is Mindy Spatt. She is the media director of TURN, the Utility Reform Network. You have 3 minutes, Mindy.
Thank you. At this end of the table, we've actually reached agreement on something. We believe it's still morning, so good morning, everyone. TURN is a statewide nonprofit organization. We have been representing California consumers for over 30 years. We have a very simple agenda. It's affordable and reliable utility service for everyone in this state. That's why we're sponsoring Prop 80. We believe this is the way to keep the lights on and keep the bills affordable. We intend to dump deregulation for good, and we believe that's in the interests of the majority of the people of the state. Prop 80 protects consumers from price gouging and rolling blackouts. It's good for the environment because it means we'll have more renewables sooner and fewer dirty power plants, and it levels the playing field between small businesses and big businesses. It does this in a few ways. It protects consumers by requiring integrated resource planning and preventing large businesses from switching back and forth between private suppliers and regulated utilities. It requires any electric company serving customers in California to have adequate reserves to serve those customers. That will prevent blackouts. If we do build power plants under Prop 80, they'll be built at the lowest possible cost to ratepayers, and we'll be prioritizing energy efficiency programs. It protects the environment by both increasing our use of renewables and removing the current cap on renewable purchases by the utilities. It also means fewer dirty power plants, as I said. The level playing field comes in because under deregulation, large businesses are allowed to purchase electricity from unregulated electric suppliers. That obviously puts small businesses who won't have that ability at a disadvantage. It's also impacted rates. In the past, what the other side is going to call choice, the choice that's been made by these big businesses is basically to avoid the costs of reliable electric service by pushing those costs onto us, the customers of the regulated utilities. Prop 80 is endorsed by a wide variety of organizations, including the Senior Action Network, the California Alliance of Retired Americans, the Gray Panthers, CalPERG, Vote Solar, Rainforest Action Network, and many others. Prop 80 is opposed by some of the most venal and greedy companies to ever set foot in California. We have Constellation Energy Group, Calpine Corporation, Mirant, Duke Energy. These are all companies that have paid millions of dollars to settle claims of market manipulation in California. Tern says, never again should we allow these companies to rob us the way they have in the past.
Thank you, Mindy. I don't know if Mindy was calling you Dave Venal, but last but not least, Dave Pellissier, representing the no on Prop 80 position. Dan Pellissier is the chief of staff for Assistant Republican Leader Keith Richman and is a public affairs professional with more than 20 years of legislative, regulatory, and media relations experience. Dan?
Well, for the final good morning. Good morning, and thank you for putting on this forum. It's important for voters to understand what they're voting on. Unfortunately, Proposition 80 is the wrong way to make energy policy for California. It's very complex. It was written by a handful of lawyers in secret. We haven't had any public hearings about it. There's been no way for them to amend it and to respond to the flaws and the errors that they in their drafting. But it's a very, very complex measure. And as I've gone through the state for the last 2 months, I've talked to a lot of people. I've talked to voters. I've talked to editorial writers. I've talked to newspaper folks. I've talked to television folks. And they've all said this is really complex stuff. So as voters are looking to make a decision on Proposition 80, I thought I'd share with you some of the quotes that have been written in editorials about Proposition 80 during the last 2 months. You should know that not a single editorial page in the state of California, not one, has endorsed Proposition 80. So let's take a brief tour of the state. The Paradise Post: Proposition 80 is more than 5,000 words in length, and its text is very technical. It's too technical for most laymen to fully comprehend. The San Francisco Chronicle: there is one thing that's as reckless as ballot box budgeting, it's ballot box energy policy. This measure does not belong on the ballot. The North County Times, that's down in San Diego: this initiative, which would tinker with California's sputtering electricity industry, poses considerable risk for consumers in exchange for no chance of helping matters. The Vacaville Reporter: Proposition 80 would be ineffectual in getting to the crux of our energy woes. It would do little to provide enough power where it's needed, when it's needed. The Bakersfield Californian: is Proposition 80 the right path forward? We say no. The Fresno Bee: Proposition 80 is billed as an initiative that would stabilize California's electricity system, but in actuality, it would be the destabilizing force by drastically altering the regulation of electric utilities in the state. The Modesto Bee: Proposition 80 would be a destabilizing force at a time when supplying electricity to much of the state demands stability. The Sacramento Bee: Proposition 80 masquerades as the solution when it looms as the problem. Proposition 80 is a path toward a black box of uncertainty. The Riverside Press Democrat: Proposition 80 asks California voters to bet their power bills that they can tinker with the state's electricity system without getting shocked. The Los Angeles Times: it's risky business to use the initiative process to write energy policy. All voters need to know is that this is an attempt to make energy policy at the ballot box should be rejected.
Thank you, Dan. And now 1 minute for Mindy Spatt to respond.
Well, we actually did get endorsements from the Bay Guardian and the LA Weekly, two newspapers that probably don't get any advertisements from the company Dan represents, the companies. It's true that electricity policy is complicated, yet Tern does not believe it's too complicated for you, the voters, to understand. There's a simple choice to be made here. Do we want to go back to the regulated system under which we had affordable and reliable electricity for years, or do we want to continue to allow greedy corporations to set policy? I'm going to end with a quote from labor leader John Sweeney. Enron isn't what happens when you let companies break the law. It's what happens when you let them make the law. These companies should not be making law for us. We have the intelligence. We have the smarts. We're the ones who need the electricity, and we can decide for ourselves.
Thank you, Mindy. And now Dan Pellissier, the no on 80.
Well, I want to add two more newspaper editorial quotes. One is from the Orange County Register: the last thing California needs is another electricity crisis. that Proposition 80 would make it more likely. And then La Opinion. Vote no en la Proposición 80. Not bad. I hope my Spanish teacher heard that. It's odd that you could find a proposition that the Orange County Register, the LA Times, and the San Francisco Chronicle agree on. And they all agree Proposition 80 is the wrong way to go. For more information about why Proposition 80 is the wrong way to make energy policy in California, go to noprop80.com. That's noprop80.com. And I'd be happy to answer any questions about the specifics and about the errors in drafting and the flaws and the contradictions in Proposition 80 during the question period. Thank you.
Thank you. You are watching and listening to Hot Topics, Cold Facts, a proposition forum covering all of the propositions on the November 8th ballot. We're going through the last four propositions, 77, 78, 79, and 80, and we now have an audience question and answer period, and we're bringing back up Liza White from the League of Women Voters of Los Angeles to help us read through some of those questions. And before we get through those questions, let me just give a quick thank you to the many people who have made this program possible. First of all, I wanted to thank Dolores Canizales from the Loyola Marymount University for helping us to book this wonderful room and hosting our event today. Jean Thompson and Frances Talbot White, Cecilia Schlesinger, and Liza White of the League of Women Voters. And then from California Common Cause, Amy Temple and Jason Pooh, today's timekeeper, and Shannon Pryor. Thank you so much for making this event possible. All of the people who do the work behind the scenes really deserve a lot of credit. And now the question and answer period. Liza White, first
Great.
Question.
Thank you. This is a question about Proposition 77 from BL. If the people are given the right to approve the new redistricting plan, why does Proposition 77 have candidates run in new districts in June 2006 when the people, the voters, don't vote on it until November 2006?
And why don't we have Aaron Lowenstein answer first?
Yes, well, that's one of the many problems with Proposition 77. It purports to give the voters the say in this, but it's set up so that the districts are in place no matter what. Even if the voters end up rejecting a plan because it's just ridiculous, those are still the lines that are going to be in place for that election. And as I said before, if the voters reject the plan, we're going to have to do it all over again. We're going to have to call up a new panel of judges. So it costs a lot more money to do a whole new plan. And it could theoretically go on and on and on.
Thank you, Aaron. Michael Wissett.
You know, I think we're missing the point that the people who are proposing that we vote and suggesting that we vote no on Prop 77 are suggesting that we do it simply because it's not the right time. You know, one of the problems that we have in the state of California is that we've become too quick to settle into complacency. We've become too quick to accept the status quo as being the way it should be because that's the way we've always done it. If we look at any of the times that redistricting has been done through retired judges, it actually has been as a result of legislators not being able to come to terms, not being able to propose the right solutions. This is by far, the status quo is by far the right way to go simply because it's the way we've been doing things. And, you know, if there is any reason for all of you to consider voting for Prop 77, look no further than what you're hearing today from both sides of the aisle. They're part of the problem. What you have here, ladies and gentlemen, are people who are getting paid a lot of money from very wealthy fractions of special interest groups who are simply continuing the political game that has failed this state.
Thank you, Michael. Next question.
Yes, this is from Mr. Schachter. It addresses 78 and 79. Since both 78 and 79 could pass, which proposition would have more control over drug companies? This is Morris Ostrin. I have two.
No, that's a very good question, because the way the law reads, if both measures pass, the one with the largest amount of votes becomes the law and the other one dies. So therefore, it's terribly important that those of you who understand that the 78 is a phony proposal, to vote no on 78 and vote yes on 79. And the only way to combat the incredible funds that are being spent by the pharmaceutical industry is for all of us to get out and talk to people about that and explain that there's a difference between a measure that covers twice as many people, 10 million to perhaps 5 million under the 78, 10 million for 79, that has teeth in it, that will guarantee that pharmaceutical industries will, in fact, participate in the program. And there's a real choice here, and you have to vote no on 78 and yes on 79.
Thank you, Marvin. And I suppose we'll give equal time to Matt Klink.
Thank you very much. When the dust settles on November 9th and the voters of California have spoken, and when Proposition 78 passes and Proposition 79 goes down to defeat, real help right now will be available for California. What the proponents of Proposition 79 either they ignore or just gloss over is that Proposition 79 will never be implemented. We know for a fact that the federal government will not allow society's most needy, people on Medi-Cal, to be leveraged to provide prescription drug coverage for people that already have it.
It's Thank happened. You, Matt.
But it's working it happened in Maine, isn't
no,
it?
It's not. Maine program is voluntary,
and
Marvin,
let me
and
just
you know
break
it.
This up and give Jamal Watkins the last word. No fighting, you guys.
I don't mind, Matt, if you go again. I mean, we can't revise history. We know that the Supreme Court has kicked the case in Maine back down to the lower courts, and it was thrown out. And it says that you can utilize programs that basically deal with up to 200% of the poverty level. Right now we're attempting to increase that to 400% of the poverty level. If the Supreme Court recognizes that this is a viable solution for individuals who are voiceless and powerless as it relates to drug companies, then we don't have a federal problem. And in fact, if it was never going to be legislated in the first place, then why are they spending so much money to fight it? It's because they recognize that it will be a better solution for Californians after November 8th election.
Thank you, Jamal Watkins.
That's not quite accurate, because what the Maine people even said in Sacramento 2 weeks ago was that they have never attempted to implement the so-called hammer, and if they did, they would need to seek federal government approval. The reason why we're opposing Proposition 79 so strenuously is the lawsuit provision, plain and simple. 210 million prescriptions annually, each of them available for a lawsuit for terms that are ill-defined.
Very good,
vote
Matt.
Yes on 78, no on 79.
Thank you, Matt. Liza, next question.
Yes, I'd like to ask Larry to read his question.
This is for Dan. Don't think I'm killing the messenger, but you described that this is a very complicated Proposition 80, and having read it, I agree with you. But can you give us one or two specific things wrong with it? Don't quote newspaper headlines. Tell us what you think is wrong with it.
That's simple. I mean, the most important reason to vote against Proposition 80 is that it reverses much of the course that the Public Utilities Commission and the energy experts and academics have been on in the last 4 years to try to recover from the energy crisis. We've gone from an orientation of a short-term, a day-ahead, hour-ahead wholesale market, and that was cratered, that was destroyed, and that's what allowed the gougers and the criminals to rip California off.
Thank
that's
you, Matt.
Dead and gone.
Sorry. Thank you, Dan Pelissier. And now, Mindy Spett.
Nothing could be further from the truth. In the fact is that the so-called progress made by the PUC, much of it is policy now, and Prop 80 would make it law. The big issue here is whether or not there's going to be public oversight over these energy companies. These are companies that robbed us. Now they're knocking at our door again. The question is, if you let them in, are you at least going to keep an eye on them while they go through your house? We know what they're capable of, and they don't want public oversight.
Well, you have been watching and listening Hot Topics, Cold Facts, a proposition forum sponsored by the League of Women Voters of Los Angeles and California Common Cause. And we've covered now in 2 hours span all eight of the propositions that you're going to be seeing on the November 8th ballot. I want to thank our speakers, and let's just give them a quick hand. Michael Wissett, Aaron Lowenstein, Matt Klink, Jamal Watkins, Marvin Schachter, Mindy Spatt, and Dan Pelissier. Thank you so much, and have a good afternoon.